Is anybody?
Nope. Just you. It's always so funny every time I.
Yeah, I am. That's me.
And then your face, it's like me now.
I know. And for a while, I was paying attention to that. I would like adjust it first so I wasn't like this. And they're like, who cares?
Yeah, right.
I'm scared.
Joe, can I swap with you?
Oh, yeah, sure. Where do you want to be? Oh, you want to be next to the. Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Sure.
Likewise. So funny, I was just on my Facebook feed. We were down in the Northern Neck a year ago this time.
I'm applying to VCU tomorrow. They have an opening for a medievalist.
Oh my God.
Like, so nice.
Oh my gosh, that would be so great. All right, I'm sending you vibes.
My grandfather's in Midlothian. Like,
you'll be in Northern Neck Ginger Ale Heaven. Oh my gosh, I was so proud to be a Virginian again.
Yep.
Anna and I hail from the same part of
extremely rural, extremely ultra-reading house.
Yeah.
So it seems like we're all settling down. So I'm going to call the meeting to order. Could the clerk call the roll?
Anderson?
Here.
Battaglia?
Present.
Bensel?
Here.
Cotman?
Absent.
DeRoos?
Here.
Fitch?
Here.
Hatch.
Here.
Howard.
Absent.
Jason.
Here.
Oh, thank you. Kaufman.
Here.
Kim.
Here.
Cruiser.
Here.
Lowe.
Absent.
Martinez.
Absent.
Michael.
Here.
Quinn.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
Van Loan.
Here.
Waymack.
Here.
Renato.
Here.
All right, 16 members present. Are there any late additions to the agenda? All right, seeing that there are no late additions to the agenda, we will move into the president and E. Molina's presentation. You have the floor. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you all for meeting with me today. I'll take just a few minutes to talk about some updates, make sure we're all sort of jointly aware of something's going on campus, and then, of course, see most of the time for any questions you might have. But I do want to welcome everybody. It's my first fall on campus. It's really, I think, hard to believe that we're a week away from Thanksgiving. I want to wish you all in advance a restful, relaxing break. I hope you get to spend time with your family and recharge your batteries. Some important updates of things that are going on. First of all, as I think most people know, but just in case not, we had dedications last month for two important facilities on campus. The new Breazzano Family Center for Business Education was dedicated on October 18th. It significantly expands teaching space for the College of Business. It has very high-tech classrooms that will allow for distance teaching. And it will also, importantly for our town-gown relations, remain on the Ithaca tax roll. So that's an important point. Secondly, as I think people know, Cornell Health, formerly Gannett, opened its doors in August. It more than doubled the amount of space available. The dedication was on October 20th. Utilization continues to grow. I saw some numbers the other day. I can't remember the exact number, so I won't quote it right now. I can find it for you. But the year-over-year growth rate and what we've been investing in student health over the past 3 years has outpaced just about anything else on campus. Importantly, we hired 5 new counselors to CAPS this summer, including 4 who are people of color. So that should help with the load somewhat. I know there still continues to be significant demand. I also want to mention three significant awards. 2 to faculty. One, Paul Pullman, the CEO of Unilever, was the name, the Hatfield Fellow. He's made Unilever a real leader in the field of sustainability. And I don't know if any of you were able to go to his talk, but it was quite a remarkable and very well-received talk. Also, Robert S. Smith, 85, received our Entrepreneur of the Year Award. He is the founder, chairman, and CEO of Vista Equity Partners. He is a remarkable philanthropist. He signed the Giving Pledge, which some of you may know of, and in fact, he's the first African-American philanthropist to have done so. He's really a remarkable person, and I have to say, his comments in New York City, Lance Collins sort of interviewed him, and he was just hilarious. He was so funny. He's great. I also want to acknowledge Kareem Pete, who is the Deputy Title IX Coordinator Staff Award. He's being honored, this is quite a significant award, on Thursday, so day after tomorrow, by the Mount Sinai Sexual Assault and Violence Intervention Program for his volunteer work in this space. The other honoree this year are jointly is the creative cast from the Broadway musical Waitress. So it's sort of a very nice recognition for Kareem's work. Next, I want to talk a little bit about campus climate, because I know that is front and center on everyone's mind. We have weathered as a community a number of awful episodes. It's really the only word I can use. As you know, we've already implemented a number of steps trying to move forward. I mentioned the hiring of the CAPS counselors. We are working closely, Student Life is working closely with the Interfraternity Council and the Pan-Hellenic Council to create a meaningful, substantive, and mandatory education program for all fraternity members in place by recruitment in the winter. The Center for Teaching Innovation, the newly created Center for Teaching Innovation, is ramping up the programs that it has in place to help educate faculty and TAs in how to teach more effectively in a multicultural classroom and how to deal with discussions of difficult issues in the classroom. This is one of the main things that our students have been asking us for. Vijay Pendekar, the Dean of Students, is developing an alternative dispute resolution program based on the notion of restorative justice. Again, not only something our students have asked for, but something that I personally think is very important. And the presidential task force, quite honestly, I had hoped we would be able to get that up and running very, very quickly. That was impossible because there were just so many strong feelings and such a sense of wanting ownership in and participation, even in constituting the membership. So that was fine. We pulled in the Scheinman Institute. They met with, I think it was about 175 or 200 people in a series of 7 different meetings. They identified key themes around the process of constituting the task force, the experiences, skills, and competencies of the members, and then the community's hopes more broadly for the work that they will do. I hope everybody saw that the nomination process is now open. Self-nominations are due by the 17th. If you want to nominate others, they're due by the 15th, so we have time then to get the person to agree. The Scheinman Institute, then based on what they learned, will put together recommendations for me. I'll make the final decision, and I hope to have the committee announced and this really finally up and running. I'm like chomping at the bit for it to be up and running by Thanksgiving. There'll be about 30 to 35 people in total on the task force. I have full confidence in the co-chairs who have already been meeting, getting to know each other, creating a community. The task force is designed to ensure that there's continued attention to these problems from the highest possible level. I'm asking them to make actionable recommendations by the end of the year in 3 buckets. What could we potentially do immediately, like, you know, within a week? What could we potentially do within 6 to 12 months? And then what are some aspirational goals? That might take longer, but we should keep our eye on them. And I'm also asking them to recommend to me how we can have this be ongoing, continuous. What sort of a mechanism will ensure that we continue to pay attention to these questions, that this is a sustainable effort by this community? Because we're part of a world that's facing very difficult challenges, and we're not going to fix this in a year or 2 years. This is going to require significant attention for the foreseeable future. I also just want to stress the task force is just one avenue we're going down. We're not going to wait for them. If there are other really important issues that come up, ideas, initiatives, we will implement them. But we want a holistic, overarching look at what we can do. I want to say a word about hate speech and free speech. It's obviously a critical area. It's one that deserves a careful and thoughtful campus conversation. If you don't know, I'd like to let you know that my office and the law school are jointly sponsoring a new series on free speech. The first speaker, Erwin Chemerinsky, will be here on November 20th. He's the dean of the Berkeley Law School. He's the co-author of the book Free Speech on Campus, which I definitely recommend. He brings a reasoned, scholarly perspective to a very polarizing topic. The event's going to be from 6:30 to 8 in the Alice Statler Auditorium. I would encourage you to attend. I would encourage you to invite other people to attend. The next event will be in April, and it will be a debate between Nadine Strossen and Jeremy Waldron, and they will sort of debate the pros and cons of hate speech codes. I'm very pleased that this assembly is reviewing many aspects of the campus code, including the section on speech. I understand there's a working group of the CJC embarking on this discussion. As I think all of you know, I've also asked one of the subcommittees of the presidential task force to look at and give me advice on speech on campus. I thought that if we were going to have a presidential level commission on climate, which seemed incredibly important, we couldn't leave speech out of that. I've asked the co-chair of that subcommittee to coordinate with the working group of the CJC. I asked both groups to engage in outreach and engagement with the whole community. And honestly, I'm convinced that if we work together, we can come up with a set of procedures that achieve our goals of having a more welcome and inclusive environment, but that also do adequate protection of free speech, which is important to our faculty in their classrooms. I believe it's important to our students in their educational experience. It's important to who we are as a campus. I've said this many times, those lines are messy, but we've got to debate them and we've got to find a path forward. And finally, I think this is finally, I want to mention that I received Resolution 4 last week. I know there was an enormous amount of hard work that went into it. I want to thank you. I understand that there's some questions about whether the process in your charter regarding community engagement was satisfied or not, and you're looking into that and need a bit of time to inventory the process, so that's fine. In the meantime, I have been reviewing the resolution, and I believe I'm going to be able to accept nearly all, maybe not all, but nearly all of the recommended changes. I'll certainly respond within the 30-day time frame, and after we get clarification that ensures that the process receive the kind of engagement that was needed. And I think that is my update for you.
Well, thanks so much.
So I have one person on the speakers list or the questions list. If you would like to also be on this questions list, just raise your hand. Matt, you were first. And I'll...
So first off, thank you so much and welcome to the UA.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I guess I've been regards as the chair of the CDC. I'm very heartened to hear your ruling that you've received and are looking optimistically at UA Resolution 4, and that also that the working group will be working, or that the President Task Force will be working with our working group. Mm-hmm. I have, my question actually is in a different arena to that. It's looking towards at Cornell Tech, which is, I'm fortunate that as a JDMBA, I have the ability to take some classes down this semester, so I must say it's a fantastic campus. And in terms of looking at logistics, the UA traditionally, we work with the ombudsman and the digital administrator. And in terms of looking at, in essence, building a duplicative campus down in New York City, just wanted to know your thoughts about eventually getting a permanent ombudsman down there and eventually down the road, potentially a permanent digital administrator. I know speaking with Ombudsman Walcott today, actually, they right now, him and Linda Falks, the associate ombudsman, are serving as interim ombudsman, but it can be a little bit, obviously, between Ithaca and New York City, it's not necessarily the most conducive environment. And I also bring this up because, and this is tangentially related, but something that I was bringing up, in that in taking classes down there, I can tell you the campus is stunning. It, truly, it's having been an undergrad here, it defies you my admittedly high expectations. And I'm sure I've shared numerous photos about it. But I saw when I was down there, a number of alumni who came in to look around the campus who were, in my estimation, treated relatively rudely by the campus security. They identified they were alumni. And the security more or less said, you can't, they said they poked their head in the building to look around. It was a lobby area. And they were told, you can't be here. They asked a question. I can't answer any questions. You must look at the website. You have to leave. We're going to contact the authorities. And in essence, being an alumni and getting the numerous emails about Cornell Tech is this wonderful new thing and having the chance to experience it, I understand that the unique structure of how the buildings are run isn't as, and because of being in New York City, can't necessarily be as open as Ithaca. But I just figured that that ties into the idea that we need to, that doesn't clone a certain amount of, even if it's alumni affairs or a tour guide down there, as well as we also have to clone the ombudsman and JA. And then I guess the other question would just be, is there anything this assembly could do to help you?
Yeah, so these are great questions. And I will certainly, in particular, your point about the alumni, I will take that to the leadership of Cornell Tech, because that absolutely should not be happening. In fact, while the buildings are, for the reasons you point out, closed, the campus, we make a big deal about the fact that the campus is open. As far as things like ombudsman and JA, let me talk with the folks there. I mean, here's the line I want to walk. We certainly want the right kind of experience there.
Yes.
We also, as we do everywhere, want to hold the line on cost.
Absolutely.
Right now, there are only 300 students there.
Absolutely.
So whether we invest in a full-time, what I want to say is I take your point.
Yes.
Let me look into it rather than sort of make up an answer on the fly.
Of course, I just want to make sure where it's processes.
Yep.
So we're going to try to, if you could keep your questions to like 30 seconds or a minute, that would be great.
And how long do I have to keep?
I'm here all night. So, yeah. Okay. So next is Chris.
Yes. Hi. Thanks so much for coming here today. So my question has to do with what the university is able, information they're able to publicly release about some of the individuals who have been accused of some of these horrendous incidents. There was an article in the Cornell Daily Sun this morning indicating that John Breedmund has been charged by the Tompkins County District Attorney with a hate crime for things back at the beginning of the semester. On the faculty and residents in Mary Dunlap Hall, and there's a number of students in my building who are justifiably fearful for their physical safety. And this isn't a panacea that's going to fix everything, but being able to release more information than no comment,
I think would
be very helpful, and I'd be interested to understand what are the
so I do have to be careful because of student privacy rules, and for in particular, but I can tell you that Mr. Greenwood is not on campus this semester.
Thank you. I'm curious if there's a report from the side in the room.
There is. Yeah, you guys, I'll connect you. Okay, Richard.
So I was, I'm a member of the faculty senate as well. And I really enjoyed your comments and approved of them on hate speech when you spoke of that. Here's the narrow question, staying within the 30 seconds I'm allowed.
When he spends time complimenting me, that doesn't count.
Yeah, time starts now.
So I'm also a member of the CJC, the the code committee. The code committee as well.
I'll repeat his question.
And the question is this. I mean, the task force looks, we had the discussion in the Faculty Senate just last week. And in that discussion and then afterward, I was told that it was possible that the task force would carve out of the campus code the section on hate speech and basically preempt what. Okay, good. That was the question.
Okay, so the question is, what's the connection? Right. So again, let me try and explain this as best I can. My view 3 or 4 months ago, and actually, to be honest, I've been leading up to this, whether it would have been a presidential task force, I don't know, but it was escalated. The timing was sped up by the incident in College Town. My view is that I personally as president, need a presidential level task force that will do a holistic assessment of the campus climate, that will make actionable recommendations, and that will, as part of that also, importantly, come up with a recommendation. It wouldn't be a task force forever, but how to have this as a sustainable ongoing effort. I think that speech and how we deal with speech is an important part of that. And I feel that in the context of this overall assessment, I want a group on this advisory board with whom I'm talking to give me advice on that, to be doing what they do. I mean, to sort of carve that out and put that separately would have been a mistake. In no sense is their job to preempt or usurp the role of the CJC. The CJC will do what it does. This group will be providing me with advice and opinion. I hope that this is such an important and difficult and tricky issue that I hope that rather than us all sort of twisting ourselves in knots over who owns what, we're all looking towards the same goal, which is something that works for all of us. And that what will happen is that this one group will be looking at it in the context of the holistic review. The CJC will be looking in the context of its long-term knowledge of the code. There will be interactions between them. I will get input from them. Hopefully I won't be put in a position where this group says, oh, you got this input and you have 30 days and we've preempted the other group. You know, that we'll have a spirit of cooperation so that in the end, we end up as a campus with something that's workable for all of us.
Thank you.
That's my take on this.
Anna.
Okay, thank you for coming.
Hi, Anna.
I am very excited to see the Cornell Tech mission launch off the ground. I'm also very optimistic about the new Milstein program,
which
combines tech and humanities, especially in light of the ways that we've seen tech divorced from humanities, turning interesting directions, alarming directions. And I am wondering whether there will be a sustained push to integrate not just 25 undergraduates each year, but grad students and faculty from the humanities at Cornell Tech throughout, so that in this collaborative environment, it's truly interdisciplinary.
So let me answer that a little bit carefully. I personally think that the involvement of the humanities in technological fields is incredibly important. I talk often about the fact that in my view, there are no technical problems. They're all socio-technical. In fact, most of them are humano-socio-technical. And what's great about the Milstein program is that while part of it is to give our humanities students an opportunity to develop some technical skills so they may be a little more marketable, the more important for us is to say that many of the technical problems we're facing have aspects of them that can only be addressed from a humanistic or social science perspective. So you talk about, you know, the future of work and how that's going to be shaped by automated cars and so on, you need that perspective. So I think that's very important. That said, the tech campus is a tech campus. It comes with some very specific requirements from the city. The programs have to be involved in digital technology. They have to be involved in helping the economic, you know, working with the corporations in New York City, helping the economics. We will be making them very interdisciplinary. We will be trying to fold in humanities where appropriate. Beyond that, I'm very interested as part of my presidency in looking at how we can, and I want to say this carefully, enhance the Ithaca experience by involvement in New York City more broadly. We're not turning our back on Ithaca, but this is an increasingly urban world, and I think there are opportunities to give our students experience there. So I'm looking to opportunities to have the humanities involved across New York City, but I don't want to say there's going to be a program in romance languages on the Cornell Tech campus. That's not going to happen. Right. So I have to be very clear about that.
Thank you.
Okay. Next is Joe.
So thank you so much for coming. So recently, the Cornell Sun put out an article about how the current tax plan that's being floated in Congress would affect financial aid and financial aid packages for students. There's been a lot of fear for undergraduates to see if anything's going to happen. Could you like kind of say anything to ease those fears, or what is the university doing?
Yeah. So let me say that the current tax proposal would be harmful to higher education, and particularly universities like Cornell in many, many ways. The excise tax we estimate would cost us over $10 million a year. That's real money. And what's particularly disturbing about that to me is it doesn't seem to be for any policy purpose. It just seems to be a way to fund tax breaks in a different part of the system. I want to ask the reporter from the Daily Sun to say, you can do what you want to do, but I would prefer not to be on the record for this because I would actually like legal counsel to weigh in. I'm telling you my understanding, not something I can fully stand behind. My understanding is that as currently written, the taxation of tuition benefits to graduate students would not apply to Cornell students because of the way we define the relationship with them. But again, I would want legal counsel, you know, someone who interprets the law better than me to do that. Some of the other provisions, for example, would make it more difficult for us to borrow money on a tax-free basis, and that would also cost us a lot of money. I do want to clarify one thing, though. When I spoke with a reporter from the New York Times, what I said was, if we have $10 million that we have to cut out of our budget, there are many ways in which we could do it. We might have to have bigger classes. We might have to have fewer faculty. We might have to support research less. We might have to have smaller aid packages. And I went on to say, but I would hate to go down that path. But that's not what I quoted. So I want to be clear about that.
And if I could just make an additional perch from my vantage point as overseeing federal government relations, there are things that each one of you can do over the coming days, and writing a letter via U.S. Post is not the way to do it. I want to compliment Rena. I understand the graduate students, the GPSA, and other groups have organized a dial-a-thon tomorrow to call members of Congress. It's important to recognize that that particular provision doesn't appear in the Senate bill currently, but that doesn't mean you should ignore senators, because there will be, once assuming both chambers pass something, there will have to be a reconciliation. So the issue will be on the table. The House will pass its bill this week, no doubt about that. The Senate, it will take a little longer, and we're not clear what that final package will look like. But we are aggressively advocating, expressing our concerns, and we encourage all of you to do the same. So thank you for that.
I do want to jump in and say one more thing since Professor Bensel asked me about the CJC, because I want to talk about a different place where I will, if pushed, usurp power. And that has to do with the consensual relations policy. So we do not, and I've said this to the graduate, I said this to GPSA when I visited there, and Anna knows about this, and Charlie knows about this. We do not have a real consensual relations policy that governs student-faculty relationship. We have sort of a policy. It's not in our official policy deck. It's, as all of you know, this has been going on for a few years. It's vague in certain ways about what is and is not permitted. It's vague in terms of how we enforce it and so on. We need to have this policy. We need to have this policy to protect faculty. We need to have this policy to protect students. We need to have this policy to protect the university. And frankly, many, many, many of our peers have such policies. We could almost pick one up and move it over, or pick one up, see how it fits in our campus, make some changes and move it over. Charlie very graciously has offered to chair a committee. I think, Anna, you're the co-chair, right? They are co-chairing this committee. It is a very broad committee. It has constituents, undergraduates, graduates, postdocs, the Title IX office, faculty, you know, everything you can imagine. But what I have said to this committee is we need to have something by the end of the year. And if we do not have something by the end of the year, at that point, I will go to the Board of Trustees with some other campus's policy and say, we need to adopt the policy. We cannot, as a university, continue to have sort of such a policy. And so I just want to be upfront about where I am sort of saying I'll go over the boundaries if I need to.
I can add you to the second speaker's list, which probably won't have time to get to. so I guess I can't.
I can say 5 extra minutes, but that's all.
Okay.
Because I do have another.
We appreciate any amount.
Because I know I just jumped in here, and, yes. but I want to be straight with you.
And I jumped in too.
So he jumped in.
No, we appreciate the jumping.
Yeah, so I'm at my 505.
Linda.
Aloha, I'm Linda. Aloha. yeah, I also want to congratulate the graduate National Student Assembly because they just passed a strategic plan resolution, which I guess you'll be seeing. It's actually on our agenda for discussion later today. And so it's really interesting listening to you because it sounds like you have a lot of plans for the university, things you'd like to see happen in New York City, things you'd like to see happen in technology, things you'd like to see happen with our campus climate. And I've worked on some other things like climate action and internationalization. And so I'm, you know, just, it seems like a perfect time to sit down and write down some things that we'd like to accomplish, where you see us going, and how we're going to get the means to get there, given that we've done a lot of reacting to federal things that are happening beyond our control. So this is a more strategic look at what where Cornell is going. And so just wanted to get your feedback on how you feel about entering into a process.
Yeah. Let me wait until I see the resolution. Let me not prejudge.
Okay.
Elena.
Oh, I wasn't expecting to get to me. So thanks for coming. I also had the opportunity to talk to you a couple times over the past couple weeks. I appreciate that. I really enjoyed hearing about the new developments of Cornell Health and how it's like doubled in size, I believe you said, and there's new hiring. But currently I've still been hearing reports from people about how there's still like really long waiting times just to even get like the pre-therapy like conversation about what kind of work needs. So I'm wondering if you could talk about any future plans.
Well, I mean, we're looking at this. What I will tell you is this is an issue across the country. I dealt with this. My role as provost of Michigan. The demand, I mean, you know those cartoons you see when you're a kid where they're showing how the company's doing and it goes through the roof. I mean, as I say, what the money we've put into this, the growth rate has far exceeded anything else. I understand there's still issues. We're trying to sort it out. It's a resource issue. And I, you know, obviously I care deeply about student mental health. I think we need to figure out a little better how to triage. We need to figure out what really the difference is. I mean, some people really do need to be seen tomorrow. Some people really do need to be seen within 3 days. And some people really could wait 3 weeks. And I think perhaps we can do a better job of that. We are absolutely looking at it. It's a real challenge.
Drew it.
Yeah, I'm a little sick. I'm sorry. it's on tree in a quaint setting with you. My name is Julie, and I am one of the campaign coordinators of the group on campus called Climate Justice Cornell. And slightly tangential to your mention of sustainability initiatives on campus, I wanted to hear your personal perspective on how specifically the investment committee of the Board of Trustees could reflect campus morals towards carbon neutrality and specifically our investment endeavors, especially.
Yeah, well, there was essay 10. Are you a member of the student assembly?
No.
Okay, well, there was a resolution passed by SA 10. I don't know whether, it will be issued shortly, which will respond to that. The only thing I would add is the Board of Trustees dedicated, I think, about 3 hours in open session to the question of divestment of fossil fuel assets a year ago, January. I don't believe the appetite is there for additional. That was the specificity.
Okay, so it's 5. There are no other UA members, or Richard on the second speaker's list. But yeah, Richard, you can follow up and then. Yeah, go for it.
So on the consensual relations thing, the Faculty Senate has roughly discussed it twice, I think, over the last year. And there's been a very brief discussion, I think, in here. If you were to announce a policy, you know, sort of just do it,
right.
I would do it provisionally so it came back.
Look.
Here's the problem. I mean, you want consensual campus governance. You want participation.
Of course I do.
If it's debilitated, you know, preempted, then people just kind of, you know, throw up their hands.
I understand that. And okay. That's why I've stood up a committee and told this committee, which is very with the dean of faculty chairing it and the representative from GPSA, to do this. Of course I want that. What I'm saying is part of my job is to protect against serious risk to the campus. And if consensual governance can't get there, then I'm sort of giving you heads up. To me, this is a serious enough risk that if consensual governance can't get there, then it's my job to make sure.
No, I appreciate that. I'm just defending prerogatives.
I agree.
Such as they are.
No, I agree. But my sense is we've been working on this for 2 years, and that's why I'm letting people know. I really, really don't want to have to do this. But we have to have such a policy. So I'm putting a lot of pressure on Anna and Charlie. Did you say Anna or Anna?
Anna.
Which we've gone over this because it's my daughter's name. You know, I just, because you raised the other issue, I want to be as transparent as I can. To me, this is that we don't have this, particularly in the current climate, is a huge risk. So we need, I'm relying on consensual governance to get there. If we can't get there, then I feel it's my responsibility to do something about it.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Charlie, Anna, the pressure is on.
you have my words. Anna and I, you have our word. You're going to get a policy as better than anything even all Professor right. Bensel can dream of.
I'm excited to see that. So, okay, so I guess with that having been concluded, we'll move on to the approval of the minutes. Matt, did you have something you wanted to add on that?
Yes, page 4, the minutes at the very bottom. Talking about Resolution 5, just to note that it was briefly introduced before being tabled, just semantic.
Do you have a specific motion
sure.
to amend?
It could say motion to amend. Emma Tagley briefly introduced the resolution, and it was subsequently tabled until the next meeting.
I can't write that quickly.
Sure.
So,
M. Battaglia briefly introduced the motion, or introduced the resolution, which was subsequently tabled until the next meeting.
Okay, could you write that send it over? And how about we move the meeting minutes until the end of the meeting? Does that sound good? Does anyone dissent to that?
May I add one more
thing? You want to add something else?
Page 4, at point 9, I would like to see in my name, please.
So page 4, I'll see.
Gateway Mech with the question.
There it is. Let's see. So yeah, that's just a clerical thing. You guys can figure that out. All right, this Joe.
Several times, I think it's supposed to say A. Martinez, not A. Rodriguez. I think that would I don't even know if that's grammatical, but
yeah,
we don't have a member.
We'll figure that. We'll figure that out. How about we table the meeting minutes then until we kind of sort some of that out?
Table the meeting minutes.
There's been a motion to table. There's been a second. Is there any dissent to tabling the meeting minutes? All right, seeing no dissent, the meeting minutes are tabled. We will now move on to assembly reports. Jung, you have the floor.
So I have two things to address. The first one is just to give everyone an update on what's been going on. The Cornell Cinema has been on our agenda for quite a bit. Our VP of Finance and also the UHR, Dave Kaufman, and I met with the cinema representatives as well as the provost, and we reached a compromise. Which I want to meet over the next few weeks to discuss how funding should work between the administration and the undergraduates and activities fee. Second point I would like to address is one thing that pertains to, I think, the GPSA and the Employee Assembly as well is the, Resolution 20 was introduced to DSA last week. It's called Equality and Undergraduate Access to the Reusano of Families for Business. It calls for the family center to be, the Reusano center to be accessible to undergraduate students past 5 p.m. But it's been tabled so that the sponsors can reach out to GPSA and to the EA because it pertains to both, right? Because it's meant for graduate students and the employees that work there for security, it affects them as well. Third is that we have, the student assembly has a community forum today at 7 p.m. at Winter Street Hall Memorial Room. If you guys would please come out It's a great chance to get to know us better and to ask questions, etc. Yeah.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions for Jump? No? Okay. Then we'll move on to the GPSA. Rena?
Yeah, in the past month, we've had people from different offices giving us presentations, and President Pollack herself also came to ask questions, but the bulk of our time has been spent on really the student activity fee allocation, and related to that, we passed Resolution 3, for the GPSA operations allocation for internal budget, and last night, we also passed Resolution 8, that is student activity allocation for byline funded organizations. And we also, as Linda mentioned, passed Resolution 6, which is really similar to UA Resolution 3, calling for the development of a strategic plan. As Joel Lina mentioned earlier, we also have currently planned a Polathon or Fornathon event tomorrow at the Big Red Barn, noon to 4. And this is to oppose the current tax bill plan in Congress. It's really short notice because we received news that they will be voting on this on Thursday. So please come. We'll have people that will direct you with call scripts and phone numbers, and there will be snacks there.
Okay. Does anybody have questions for Rena? Matt?
Actually, four. Okay. I just wanted to thank the activity fee, just to note for everyone that this is the first time, to my knowledge, ever that one of the assemblies has actually requested to reduce the activity fee, even in the spate of positive inflation. That's actually very, I think it's very important to do, especially everyone always talks about the Board of Trustees and the administration holding the line on tuition increases and other cost increases. And just to appropriately highlight and praise the GPSA for, in essence, putting their money where their mouth is and actually cutting their activity fee for the first time ever.
Any other questions for Rena? Nope, then let's move on to the EA. Ulysses, can you hear?
Oh, I'm sure you all can hear me well, if not at all, but I'll give you an update anyway. We've really been sitting quietly whilst all this Cornell Cinema drama has gone down. No, I'm kidding. We actually have been pretty busy. Our last meeting, we had Gordon Barger, who's the Senior Director for Benefits, come in and follow up on a resolution that was passed last year, which pertains specifically to looking at gender-specific benefits, particularly as they pertain to family planning, because there were some discrepancies in what was being offered to same-sex female couples versus same-sex male couples. So, particularly options around surrogacy or having children essentially were not covered for same-sex male couples. So, there's going to be an ongoing discussion. We've got some action items, so there will be a long ongoing discussion about that and the adoption benefit that that we currently have. At our meeting tomorrow, we'll be having our annual Cornell Climate and Sustainability Update from the Sustainability Office. We'll be coming in and discussing that. We have a couple of internal resolutions that we'll be discussing about our budget and our bylaws, and then the very long, drawn-out discussion of Jeremy's resolution on condemning violence and hate. We have some specific items that we are looking to be addressed there, and a couple of other resolutions around advancing a comprehensive transportation study has been advanced, and which apparently was mentioned in The Sun, but I had not actually introduced it yet, but our furthering the institutional commitment to LGBTQ inclusion, which is set to be introduced tomorrow at our meeting.
Okay, does anybody have questions or comments? Okay, then we'll move on to the Faculty Senate. Charlie?
Yeah, I mentioned a couple of things. So we passed a resolution that redefines the process for becoming emeritus. That probably doesn't interest most of you. And there's, we had three great speakers on the free speech thing. We had Professor Tebbe from the law school who gave sort of a scholar's view of the First Amendment. We had Wendy Tarlow from the University Counsel Office who prosecutes cases, and Risa Leibovich from the CJC, and the union of those presentations was very excellent. Professor Tebbe in particular, I received many positive comments on that. It was probably the best presentation we've had in the Senate in recent memory. It was just a terrific thing. So under the heading of educating the campus, and that includes the faculty, that was a real high point for me. We talked about the upload syllabus thing. There's some issues about that. The basic problem is that the committee looked into it. It was a technical achievement, right, that you can physically upload your syllabus. That's a great thing. But then the provost's office left it to the colleges to, quote, enforce it. And there's a lot of ambiguity and a lack of clarity there. So I'm going to work on changing that.
Questions or comments for Charlie?
Sure. Just real quick, Charlie, being a staff member who has in the past been very close with Mary's faculty and providing support, I am a little bit interested in what kind of changed through it. Can you just kind of brief 1,000-foot view?
Yeah, three things. So each college votes on this. So we've made it uniform across the colleges on the process, making it very simple. We've produced checklists to make the whole process easy. And it's a monumental event in a lot of people's lives. So you want to make it go very smoothly. We're turning emeritus into, this is why it has to go to trustees, make emeritus a modifier like visiting or adjunct. And this will solve some current problems involving associate professors and full professors who are both eligible for emeritus. But we'll open the door, say, in the future for, like, you've been a great senior lecturer for 10 years, senior lecturer emeritus. We've got all these different kinds of professors now, research professors, professors of the practice, the librarian, the you know, it'll make possible it's just a status. It's not a promotion. It's a recognition, right? And we have to be much more, I'll use the word generous with it. So that'll be the outcome of it.
Excellent. Gina.
I just had a quick question, Charlie. The presentation that was made about free speech, is that available for folks to watch?
There's no video. We have transcripts. If you go to our website, the minutes will be there, all right? There's no video, there's transcripts, but Professor Tebbe provided like four great readings that you can download. Risa provided something, so there's a lot of reading material there. And then on our BOF website, we have a whole free speech kind of thing too. So there's lots of stuff to read there.
John.
Hey, could you elaborate on like what issues are working for this with this?
The driver, although it's not the major thing, people feel it's the professor's call. Okay, it is your call what you do the first day of class when you may talk your way through the syllabus. It's your call about the detail, the level of detail in your syllabus, and there's no guidance about that. And basically, my view is it's up to the professor. Okay, I might not know what I'm teaching next semester. The thing is, let's have it for pre-registration, which was 2 weeks ago or whatever. That precipitated it. What if I don't know what I'm going to teach? What if I'm reading a book that's going to figure in the syllabus in January? I'm not done with it. I can't map out that syllabus. Professors seem to think that they were expected to produce these detailed day-by-day syllabi, and that's just not the case. No, there are no words out there that even suggest that, but that's the feeling. And the problem is the provost's office didn't, you know, here it is. Here's Becky's slide presentation from March. Now go to it. There's not enough guidance. The provost office has to provide guidance and tell faculty any old syllabus, however you see fit, is okay. I think there should be words that it's great. You guys shop around for courses and it's nice to have detail, but if there's nothing there, that's okay too. And to me, the first day of class is just as important, in fact, more important than the syllabus, because it's content and the professor. And that's the key thing, the sum of those two things, which define a course to me. So syllabus, upload, great, great. If you do it, fine. If you just want to upload a sentence, that's fine too.
Is there currently a kilobyte minimum on the syllabi?
Minimum, or yeah. Maximum, you mean?
Minimum.
What, if I just say...
Couldn't someone just upload like a PDF with a single sentence?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You can do all that. Again, the faculty seem to feel that they were being ordered to produce these massive syllabi. And it's an example, I don't know where that came from, but all the provost office has to do is say, here are some possible ways to do it, and it's up to you to choose the level of detail.
Finding those expectations is where.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions for Charlie? No, okay, then we'll move on to committee reports. Anna, was there anything from the executive committee?
So we are going to try to work on doing speaker time limits again. I forget if it was 1 minute or 45 seconds. 1 minute.
Let's do 1 minute.
I will give you a 10-second heads up. Second thing, we passed last time our statement on hate crimes with some amended language. We don't actually have that language. So if people can remember it, we are trying to reconstruct it. There were some technical glitches, and so it's not in the minutes. Please email me if you can remember what it was approximately, and then we will get this thing out the door. And final note, if you want to invite people to speak at the UA, please just get in touch with me. It's a very busy year, but we will do our best to fit them in.
Okay.
Questions?
Any questions? Matt, I think you had your pocket raised.
I just wanted to say that I'm personally not a fan of speaker time limits unless we have a need for them. And also to note that to impose them requires a 2/3 vote of those present because our charter and bylaws have no narrow means for telling the right to the speaker is considered a supermajority change. So if we're planning to do that, you would need a motion and a vote.
Okay, is there a motion?
Motion.
Okay.
To impose a 1 minute speaker limit because I would like to get out of here on time most evenings.
Okay, is there a second?
A second.
There's a second. Okay, so if you are in favor of a 1 minute time limit,
discussion. There would be discussion.
Okay, we can discuss it.
Okay. The purpose of this is to limit the speaker's time for public members of the public.
So there's been a motion to enforce a 1 minute time limit on speakers. So now we're in discussion on that motion. I see you can speak first. And then we have Jeremy and then Matt. Anybody in the assembly.
To speak
for an infinite amount of time. Well, it's for a right now you can speak for an infinite amount of time.
No, point of information. Actually, it's 10 minutes in Robert's rules as standard.
Okay, so a 10 minutes, so you can speak for 10 minutes, theoretically.
I think part of the question is, this motion would limit the ability of any member of the assembly to speak to 1 minute. That's what this motion is for, if I understand it's correct. I think that's what Marty's asking.
Yeah, that's what the motion is for. Jeremy.
So I want to clarify as well that doesn't mean you only ever get to speak for 1 minute on a topic. The reason this has been brought up is because we have been running over regularly on these meetings. If you reach 1 minute and you haven't finished everything that you're going to say, you go on the second speaker's list and you will get back to you. But this gives an opportunity for everyone to have their say without having to run over. That's all.
So I have Matt and Charlie on the speaker's list. Okay, I'll let you the second speaker, please, Marty. Okay, Matt?
Thank you. I just wanted to say I'm strongly against adding a speaker time limit. I believe the reason we've been running over is due to busy agendas is I have some we have some discussions about, and also, I mean, the fact that we've had interesting topics. That being said, we generally allow members to speak. I mean, people don't generally run that long, but to me, having a cutoff time limit might stifle discussion. I don't necessarily see a need for it. Again, we've adopted them in the past on a temporary basis when we have things that come up, such as fossil fuel divestment, where we thought there would be a need. But for most things, as you know, we have a relatively short speakers list. So curtailing the rights of someone to speak without cause, to me, is something that I don't think it's a road we need to go down. And I believe in this case, essence, we're trying to solve a problem that I'm not necessarily sure convinced we have, and also not sure this would actually solve. But I'm concerned it would collateralize and damage our ability to have a holistic and inclusive discussion.
Charlie?
I like what Jeremy said, that we can cycle through more speakers. If you have 3 minutes of stuff to say, we cycle through 3 times, we can hear you. It forces people to do homework in advance, forces you to think about what you want to say clearly and succinctly.
Anna?
So I am biased by being accustomed to governing bodies with this practice already. I would point out that it truly is in Robert's rules, and yes, we need a 2/3 vote to change it. That it enables hearing everyone, where at the moment we do have some members who, including me, tend to talk at length and can do work on being more succinct. And again, it does not cut off discussion. It does not cut off ideas. It postpones them so that everyone else also has a chance to be heard.
Ulysses.
Oh,
Sorry, I muted myself. I'm actually not even going to beat a dead horse. I agree with what Charlie, Jeremy, and Anna have said. Be succinct and get to the point. So I'm here for it. Let's do it.
Okay. Richard.
So I also support this, but I would say that in the House of Representatives, only rules I really know are the House of Representatives. And unanimous consent, once the time limit runs out, is often granted. And that might be a practice we would adopt. That practice tells you when you're over the limit. It does constrain, but it doesn't break up thought. So I would, with that in mind, I would support this.
Okay, John.
Call the question.
Okay, so there's been a motion to call the question.
Second.
There's a second. Is there any dissent to voting? Okay, seeing no dissent to voting, we will vote on the motion to enforce a 1 minute speaker time limit. The way I understand it is this is essentially the adoption of a standing rule. And so I think this only requires a majority vote because it's a standing rule.
Point of order, it would not abridging the right of the speaker. Abridging the right of the speaker is always 2/3 vote for Robert's rules.
It's 2/3.
Okay, then we'll
specifically
do,
for this in Robert's rules.
Okay, then we'll do a 2/3 vote. If you are in, is it a 2/3 vote of members present or a 2/3 vote of the assembly?
But a standing rule be seated to have a rule for today would be present.
Okay, so then we need, so if we're adopting this for, you know, forever, then it's gonna need what, 13 votes to pass?
Yes.
Yeah, Matt, I'm sorry, I asked someone to do
math. You're 19 members.
20. It's not going to be 13, it's going to be 14.
Yep, 14. So we need 14 total members to approve this. I think we have 17 here. So, okay. So if you're in favor of a 1 minute speaker time enforced ad infinitum, please raise your hand. I counted Ulysses. If you're opposed, chair abstains. By a vote of 10-5-1, the motion fails. We will not be adopting a 1 minute speaker time limit. We'll be sticking with what's in Robert's rules for 10 minutes. Okay, anything else from the executive committee?
I will make a personal request that people try to be succinct and respect how much time they are taking from their fellow assembly members.
And with that having been noted, I very much appreciated the discussion we just had about speaker time limits. That was a great use of time. So let's move on to the Codes and Judicial Committee report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's been a long time since we had a UA meeting. It's been a very busy time for the CJC. We've held, I believe, four or five meetings in the interim, a community forum. We've looked at a number of things, and I will attempt to be brief with those. The CJC is currently in the process of finalizing the questions for the University Hearing Review Board selection process. We are trying to do it early this year in an effort to ensure that we are on the ball and to ensure that we are able to give everyone an adequate time to respond. Once those questions are approved, I intend to work with the Office of the Assemblies, as we've worked in the past, we always appreciate their support, to create a timeline. We're looking, hopefully, to get the ball rolling as soon as the spring semester begins, so that we'll be able to be ahead of schedule. We also started the process of looking at how we wish to examine the code of conduct in terms of our last meeting. We had a discussion about noting that we're running low on time this semester to, in essence, not necessarily begin undertakings now, considering we have at most 2 meetings remaining. However, we also are hearing from the judicial administrator providing a report to us tomorrow. We are also looking at our meeting after Thanksgiving to have the hearing review board chairs, as well as the administrative chair of the boards, come provide a presentation for us. It was something that members of the assembly were very interested in after the McBride hearings last semester, and we're hoping to do that. In terms of the hate speech working group, the hate speech working group has been created, charged, has 3 members staffed from the CJC, has 1 individual staff from the GPSA I've heard of. I know I've been working with the dean of the faculty to do that. The other assemblies are working as well. We also held a forum 3 weeks ago on Friday, I'd like to say, and the executive I can look up. We received a very large amount of feedback from the community, and when the committee is incorporating that, I've also passed the
feedback along to the chair of the working group, which would be Mr. Connor Hodges. Being perfectly honest, the forum was an interesting experience. It didn't necessarily go as we expected, but as I said before, we received a lot of valuable feedback. People are very passionate about this issue. And just as President Pollack said, it's in terms of moving quickly is difficult because everyone wants to have a lot of input and buy-in, and it's very good we have that. Also, finally, actually not finally, but this is a lot here. The committee also, as you will remember, the UA requested that the CJC have some form of language to this body by the end of the semester regarding hate speech. As President Pollack touched on, that was a very long, that was our goal, and the committee has done its utmost to meet that goal. At this point, the committee is no longer going to fill that. We have a working group that is getting underway, and their goal is to be holding more forums, possibly this semester, but definitely next semester. And therefore, I would request that the timeline be extended to accommodate that. And finally, and this is something that I've actually given a great deal of thought to that I want to bring up, but I believe it's important. I've received word from a number of committee members that there have been comments and other intonations that some people have perceived as threatening or otherwise concerning about the certain topics the committee may choose to address. I just wanted to say that, and it's deeply concerning to hear that from members and individuals, and to say that we will let the committee and the members on it do not take offense lightly, will not be intimidated, that we will continue to address our business in the best way possible, and that we will not tolerate this. Those who have received them are possibly, allegedly, and may have said something that may have been misconstrued, though they know who they are. But that being said, I believe it's important for this assembly to be aware of this and to be aware of the potential for this. We are touching controversial issues, and it's very important to be aware that words have meaning and that sometimes individuals can perceive or otherwise be concerned what they hear. Again, just wanted to make things for these members aware. So that was a lot, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, so I'll jump to the speakers list. Joe's first.
So I do want to agree that the timeline should be extended so that we can really fully pursue this in the best policy possible. And I do want to kind of make sure that your members on CJC are supported, because this sort of like threatening comments is not something new. I kind of was observing it throughout the whole entire like essay Cornell Cinema thing. And some members, I'm honestly very concerned, because if we have members of our committees and members of the assemblies like feeling that they're being threatened and their mental health is deteriorating, they can't do as best as work possible. And I really want to if you need anything, or if your members need anything, just tell them to reach out. If it's not one of the assembly members, but it's any sort of like professional to talk about it.
Yeah. On the idea of extending, we would need a formal motion to really do that. So if someone wants to do that, that's just like how we would have to do that. Otherwise, it's by the end of the semester.
We could do it. If there's a lot of questions, we could do it at the end of the question list once we finish the list of questions instead of jumping into it. That's amenable.
I have you on the speaker's list. Next is Charlie.
And what's a sample threat?
At this point, I'm not. Some individuals have come to me in confidence and asked me not to disclose it. I'd be happy to talk to you offline about it, but I suspect it may be perception, it may be other concerns. But the idea is just the very least, there's concerns to be a smoke-filled room, and I wanted to bring it towards the assembly. And I said, though, people have asked to keep it quiet and confidential, I'll be happy to talk to you offline.
I mean, is it about a topic you shouldn't be talking about?
Certain topics, yes, there are topics within CJC's purview. And speaking honestly, the committee is not spoiling for a fight by any means. That being said, if we are going to touch topics because they're in our purview or because members wish to touch or examine them, we certainly will. It's just more or less asking members to consider the words carefully and also to alert the assembly that that I have received this information.
Okay, Anna.
Should we be concerned about, and should we be thinking about notifying campus police of physical threats to the committee?
At this time, I would say, I haven't heard anything about physical. I've heard some minor things. But that being said, I mean, it's a question of what you would do and what people would react if there are concerns about character assassination, other concerns about, in essence, quote unquote, making someone's life a living hell, or as very concerning topics if the committee chooses to address certain issues which other people are passionate about and therefore maybe a deep concern to certain members of the community and public who have reached out to them.
So I just want to point out, because I know that not everyone here is on the CJC, I actually don't think we need to alert the police, because Kathy Zoner is a member of the Codes and Judicial Committee. So I think we've got that covered, actually. Jeremy?
So I was going to
essentially say that, but to generalize the issue to all of our committees, which is we really should have a clear idea of how we handle in committees if the committee is handling a sensitive topic and it becomes a tense relationship. How do we deal with that? And that might be something that to think about as we move forward, how we handle difficult topics within our committees, particularly if they generate perceived threat from the community.
Yeah. Does anyone else wish to be on the speakers list? No? Okay. Then did you have a motion you wanted to make?
This is based off consultation with the committee. I move to extend the timeline for the CJC through the end of the academic year. I also would move to request that the chair of the working group provide an update to the assembly at some point in the early portion of the spring to ensure that the assembly is aware of that.
I have a question. I'm going to second this, except yes. That I think you said to move the deadline for the CJC to the end of the year.
The working group is under the CJC, so and therefore it would be under us.
Do you mean
I second the motion?
Okay, do you mean move to extend the timeline for the working group's recommendation?
This assembly charged the CJC, or requested the CJC to have some recommendation about language or otherwise to this assembly by the end of the semester. The request is to extend that charge, the UA's charge, through the end of the academic year, and also to note that we'd like the chair of the working group to provide an update at some point in spring about the activities of the working group. I hope we will have more time in spring. Our goal is to be transparent and to truly engage the communities. This takes time. I'm confident the spring gives us a long enough runway to do that. In theory, it might have to be extended again, but I think the spring at this point, from where we're talking with Mr. Hodge, the chair, I think we'll have a better idea where we are, and I think we'll be able to at least have some form of recommendation out by then. Whether or not it's perfect and needs more polish is something we won't know until we get closer.
So I said the motion.
Okay, so there's a motion to extend the timeline for the September charge to the Codes and Judicial Committee until the end of the academic year. There's a second. So we'll now move into debate on that motion. Anna, then Jeremy.
If we extend it to the end of the academic year, then we are hoisting the problem off on next year's UA and not ourselves handling what the ad hoc committee and then the CJC recommend. And I want that to be clear to people as we're discussing this timeline.
Okay. Jeremy, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yes.
On that?
Okay. I'd actually like to amend the amendments.
Okay.
What I would offer is that the CJC provide a report of their progress by the end of this semester, by the end of the current timeline, right, rather than the actual changes, a progress report, and a progress report at each CJC presentation at the beginning of each update, at each CJC update thereafter on the status, until such time as we have completed the progress, and completed a change or a recommendation.
So I can't write
right.
that all down.
So I'll work on the language,
yeah.
I
get the gist of it.
Yeah, the gist is that instead of setting these for the deadline, saying that in the time frame the UA has given the CJC, we will instead provide an update on the progress.
Oh, is this the exact language?
Yes. The CJC within the time frame allotted by the UA.
Okay, so how about we just kind of make bullet points?
Sure.
So how about we have
within the time frame allotted
by progress report by end of semester.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And provide updates on progress.
And then provide updates on progress at each CJC.
At each UA meeting.
At each UA meeting.
For the CJC, during the CJC report.
Provide.
Until the recommendation is complete.
Also, able to Ulysses is waiting to get a speaker's list.
Yes.
Okay. At each UA meeting. Okay.
Did that make sense?
Yeah, I think I understand. I think I understand. Ulysses?
Sure. I just wanted to voice my dissent for this, not because I disagree with extending the timeline. I actually think that needs to be done, but I don't think this should be entertained right now. I think you're putting the CJC in the exact same position you put them in before. when I left the executive committee meeting or executive session where this motion was being discussed the first time, it was, I left when it was still just, they were to come back with a timeline. I didn't realize that they had told them that they were supposed to come back with full recommendations by the end of the semester. I think the CJC, you've had what, 6-8 weeks now? I don't know how long at this point. At this point, I think it would be best that instead of debating this right now, the CJC come back at our next meeting with a timeline, an actual project plan, after you've had time to discuss the scope of what you want to discuss, and you know what our meeting schedule is, you know what all that stuff is, come back with a timeline that adheres to the end of the year so we can all say as an assembly, this makes sense. Let's look at this now so everybody knows what their checks and their progress is to be at this point, instead of doing this blank check thing again with no actual plan, because we've got to stop this practice.
Okay, Matt, did you want to respond?
No, actually, I was just going to say, I have no problem providing updates about the work group to the UA, generally try and include my report, and that's not a problem. I think Ulysses' point is certainly well taken, that our goal is to get something workable out of this, or in this case, the working group and committee decide not to do something else, to have a rationale for why. In terms of the earlier point about getting something by the end of the year, obviously, if we get to the UA, at the very last meeting, it wouldn't do us much good because it wouldn't be voted on. I think President Pollack summed it up very nicely in her talk. These are very large issues, and any change at all, or even no change, is going to require very extensive consultation. I'm perfectly happy to go back to this, talk to Mr. Hodges, and even bring up the CJC meeting tomorrow briefly about if we want to look at a more concrete timeline. That being said, the working group is still very much getting off the ground, and it's very, the goal is to try and ensure that we are, I guess, best able to consult the community, consult the networks, and therefore, if that means we need to do another timeline, I'm amenable to doing whatever the assembly is willing to have us do.
Okay, next is Richard.
So, just briefly, I doubt the CJC is going to be able to come up with a timeline of its own, in part because of the coordination with the task force, when the task force is still being set up and the subcommittee and the CJC and so forth and so on. I kind of think that idea of a timeline is not going to give the kind of flexibility that's going to be needed in this situation. There's a fire here. The fire is that if we don't get off and do our stuff, the task force is going to preempt it. And that is enough to move us, I think. Without a specific timeline. I think it's really important that we move ahead, but not.
Okay, Anna.
Sorry.
Okay, happens to
me. I am going to suggest we move the question now and vote it down and then ask the CJC to come back next time we meet as Ulysses proposed, so that we can actually devote time on the schedule to this and give it the full discussion it clearly deserves. And also invite members of the ad hoc committee who appear to be very relevant to this conversation.
Okay, so you recommend voting on.
Yeah, if people are comfortable with this path, because otherwise we're voting on something that we haven't fully talked.
Move
to table. Move to table. Okay.
The table is.
Yep.
Okay. So there's been a motion to table.
Second.
There's been a second. That's a non-debatable motion. So if you're in favor of tabling, please raise your hand or placard. If you are opposed to tabling, please raise your hand. Placard. All right, I abstain by a vote. Did you vote?
I was going to abstain.
Oh, no, okay. No, that's good. It's by a vote of 9-5-2. This is tabled. I essentially think that what that means is you should come back next week with the CJC's. Yeah, in 2 weeks with the CJC's timeline, is I think what we're getting at.
Just a note we have one meeting tomorrow. The agenda for that is already pretty full. and we're not, we won't be meeting on TIP. Actually, that's the only meeting we have between now and our next meeting because of the Thanksgiving holidays. So in terms of just logistically getting something to this assembly, I mean, I can certainly generate a draft outline, but the ability to have a committee sit down and really run through this is not the greatest because at this point, we're in the semester, and we're coming up on the holidays.
Anna?
Can we delegate any of this to the ad hoc?
I can certainly talk to Connor about this and then have the, and see what his opinions are. I mean, I think Richard's point about the presidential task force, there's so many moving parts here to say, okay, we want to chain ourselves something. I think part of the concerns we had this semester was shooting for an aggressive timeline also caused us to rush, and therefore we did some things that may or may not have done. I mean, it may or may not have been the best decision, but I think they were the best decision at the time with the constraints we had. The concern obviously is, this is still so ethereal to really hammer it down to a timeline is, in my estimation, very difficult, outside of more than just the general who wants to make it at the end of the year.
Did you have something you wanted to add?
I have a motion.
Okay.
We are at 5:41. We have three resolutions on the table today. So I'm going to A, ask that people keep the remainder of the reports brief, and B, motion to add 15 minutes to our meeting time.
So there's been a motion to add 15 minutes to the meeting. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a second. Oh, wow. I don't think I've seen you guys agree on something in a while. there's a second. Is there any dissent to adding 15 minutes? There's dissent. Okay, then we'll move into debate on the motion to add, to amend the agenda and add time. Marty, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yes, I think we can adjust the agenda and not have a lot of these reports. And then just, you have a right to do that, and then just go right into business each day and take the rest of the time to do it.
We don't have a right to do that, but we can motion to do that.
Yeah, I'll move that we suspend all other reports and go to the business.
So before we can do that, we have to decide whether or not we're going to adjourn. Okay. So now that I have stated the motion, it requires a vote of the assembly to dispatch with it. So no, is there anyone else on the speaker's list who'd like to speak on this? Okay, there's been a motion to table the motion to amend the agenda.
To table by unanimous consent.
That's not a motion.
What is this?
Not a motion.
Guys. I've never had to bang the gavel at a UA meeting. Okay. People would prefer to just not do liaison reports, move into resolutions, and then we'll extend if we absolutely have to. Yeah?
Yes.
Does that sound good? All right, that's what we're going to do then. So we're going to go right into business of the day, resolution 6. Naj, sorry to kind of put the fire under you really quickly, but go for it.
Okay, we'll try to make this brief.
So just to start off really quickly, this resolution was passed in the student assembly already, and it was passed to the CIC last week. Enjoy the credit.
Cool. So as Joel and Lena said before, this was passed through the SA, but we really would like the university's support on this. There are two main points of this resolution. One is about investment transparency, and the other is about investment responsibility. This resolution asks that the Board of Trustees Investment Committee routinely discloses universities' renewable energy investments as snapshots in the past, as it's already done in existing quarterly reports to increase endowment transparency. And then the second point would be to ask for the Board of Trustees to either create a committee on investment responsibility, which aligns with the STARS suggestion to increase investment responsibility and transparency. There is a metric that Cornell has, I believe it's 1.3 out of 7 points in the investment responsibility and transparency section. And so we're asking that Cornell not only increase this metric by creating a committee on investment responsibility, but also working with the President's Sustainable Campus Committee and Senior Leaders Climate Action to convince the investment committee to form a separate committee on investment responsibility.
Do you want to add?
Just like a friendly amendment to lines 6 through 8, mistake to erase that. But other than that, at the CIC, we had strong support for the resolution. I think it would be strong to, I haven't supported the resolution, so I'm interested to hear any comments or feedback and potentially pass it today.
So a couple things. So the first thing is, I don't think there can possibly be that many members, like undergraduate members, line 6 through 8.
Yeah, so those mistakes.
Okay, so do we want, are you like moving to take that out?
Yeah.
Okay, so just so that it says like University Assembly Campus Infrastructure Committee?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's been a motion to amend line 6 through 8 so that it just reads on behalf of University Assembly Campus Infrastructure Committee. Does that make sense?
Second.
Okay, there's a second. We'll now move into discussion. There's been a motion to move the question. Is there a second?
Second.
There's been a second. Okay, so if you're in favor of making the amendment, please raise your hand or placard. If you're opposed, if you'd like to abstain, by a vote of 13-0-2, the amendment passes. Okay, was there anything else that you wanted to add, or we'll take questions then? So I only have one person on the speakers list, Matt.
Thank you, and I will be brief. One of my questions was the confidence in the committee. I guess that my question still is the confidence in the committee. Are you fully staffed? In essence, have you spoken to other constituencies about this? And the other question would be in terms of the STAR system. Is it universally accepted in terms of what goes into that? Because there obviously I've seen a very large number of sustainability rankings, and you can't possibly do well on every single one of them because they have all that different things. So how does STARS fit in? How do our peer institutions work? And also, have you spoken to the administration formally or the sustainability office or the SCLAG or other places about where the university falls on this metric?
So as for the staff, there are a lot of qualified people on executive committee of the president's sustainability campus committee. I would be willing to do this. I talked to Sarah Zomanek, who is in the campus sustainability office and the senior leaders climate action group, who directly works on the climate action plan. Unfortunately, it can't really, investment transparency can't go under the climate action plan because it is technically an indirect aspect of carbon neutrality. As for the STAR system, Cornell currently has an exceptional score of it's actually down. Last year it was 70, and now it's 6.8 something. It's in the report somewhere. And one of the only metrics that we are severely lacking in, severely falling behind in our peer institutions, is in the metric that includes credits entitled investment disclosures and committee on investor responsibility. So does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you. Who also creates this STAR system? Is it an organization? Is it governmental standards, or where does it come from? Or are they just a group that does it themselves?
I believe they do the investments.
Thank you.
Karen? I think it's the national standard. The acronym is it's certainly most institutions, but they're also the ones that I believe, I may be wrong, give out the standards for gold, platinum ratings on.
So that's lead to.
Yeah. The same organization.
Okay. Thank you. That's what I was trying to figure out where they are. So thank you.
Jeremy?
So I got to see a draft version of this as part of the PSC, and I want to say you greatly improved this.
Thank you.
I see a lot of the feedback from that group here. What I was going to say is this: the STARS was actually one of the recommendations made by the President's Sustainability Council as a way of standardizing the request for information so that we have something that has a benchmark that we can use as a comparison.
Did anybody else have anything that they wanted to add?
Motion to table.
Just so you know what that means, we normally don't vote on resolutions at the meeting. They're introduced, even if they have relatively broad support. So there's been a motion to table. There's a second. Again, impressed. Any Is there any dissent to tabling? All right, seeing no dissent to tabling, the resolution is tabled. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
I really appreciate you managing to make it through this. See you in a couple weeks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so next is Joe, your turn.
Hello. Linda. This is not, so like, just for reference, what you see in the resolution is not the actual amended version that we did last meeting. It does not include Bob's one amendment that he made in the line 16 and 17. There was an amendment. I can't remember it. If Bob was here, but. Oh, there was also one in line 48. Again, can't remember it. But there is one amendment that I remember that I forgot to make at that meeting. In line 40, motion to amend completed in 2018.
So you want to just turn the word by into in?
Remove spring. So completed in 2018.
Oh, okay, so there's been a motion. Guys, online. So we're on the last resolution in the packet, and we're on line 40 of that resolution. What was that?
The penultimate one, the one after that is the bylaw.
The penultimate resolution in the packet. And so we're on line 40 of UA resolution 3. And so there's been a motion to amend it from instance. So instead of it reading completed by spring of 2018, you would say completed in 2018.
Second.
Okay. There's been a second on that motion. Is there any, we'll now move into discussion on the motion. Charlie?
Yeah. I've done strategic plans, and I mentioned a month ago when we talked about, so there are a lot of work. I don't feel that you've looked at all the filed an environmental impact statement. Here's what I mean by that. So, for example, all these things involve research. Any strategic plan at a university like Cornell, a lot of it is about research. There's no mention of that. But right now, in the provost, he has these seven strategic initiatives. If you look on the website, five or six of them have already produced reports. Some of them are called strategic plans. There's probably like 60 faculty are working on this. Okay, there's a thing called a visionary. That's President Pollack. She has a group, a visionary committee, looking at Cornell Tech. Okay, that's also part of your thing here. We got these three gigantic task force. Everything in that they come up with is strategic, is in this realm. So I would sort of say that right now there is so much stuff going on that intersects this that I can't see doing this now. Also, international programs, there's going to be a new vice provost for that, whatever. So I just feel, it's laudable. You'll learn a heck of a lot about this. It gives you a global sense of the university. When I look at all those things I mentioned, tons of faculty and students are involved in that. So I just feel it's not necessary at this time because we're already doing it. It's not one giant package, but it's like six or seven very big things going on at the same time. And there's the matter of workload. We know from trying to staff these committees how hard that is. Who are you going to get? So I'm just offering this is this practical stuff that I think should be brought up here. I would sort of say, I would vote for this if you did a walk down this list of activities and say, despite that, despite all this stuff going on, we need to do this, then I would vote for it. But I don't see an argument saying we need even more people looking at these issues than the probably 100 faculty right now that are involved in these things.
So. That point is well taken, but I'm going to ask that while we're talking about the amendment specifically to take out. Did we already do that?
Yeah.
We did that. I'm sorry, I was a brain fart. Okay, so we're going to move. Yeah, so you're the Ulysses is next on the speaker's list.
Sure. I have to agree with Charlie to a certain extent. I don't disagree with the idea, the intent behind the resolution to coordinate the efforts into one strategic plan. I think, Charlie, that's been done many a time. I don't think just because there are a million things going on right now, we shouldn't embark on a strategic planning process. I think the timing of this is a bit flawed. That is where how I go back to how I agree with you, Charlie. It's just there are so many things going on, and you have to actually give the president time to actually finish assembling her cabinet. That would be nice. And letting the dust settle a bit so people can get acquainted with the institution and begin that holistic process, which they actually are planning to do. They just don't have everybody in place yet to do that. So giving them the restriction of having this done in 2018, I can tell you is not going to happen. But it might be more realistic. I mean, strategic planning typically takes a good year or so to put out something that's, you know, visionary 5 to 10 years out. And so I think it might be better to actually table this resolution or something else, or come up with some different language in the future. But that's my two cents, so go for it.
Richard?
So I also agree with Charlie. There are so many task forces that figuring out what they're doing and what's relevant to us as an assembly and what's important for us to hear is a real problem. I don't think this is the way to address it, but it is a real issue. So it, maybe something like a monitoring committee for all of these task forces that then highlight issues that we might be concerned with is the way to approach this.
Linda?
So having worked on climate action, on the climate action plan, we're actually writing a 5-year report for climate actionization for the university right now. And the number one recommendation for those areas is to have a strategic plan, because there are so many competing priorities. Strategic plan, strategic just means you look at everything you want to do and you figure out where you need to step down. And so since we have so many things going on, and our last strategic plan only went through 2015, I'm telling you, I'm writing a report to the president on internationalization, and the number one recommendation is to do strategic planning, as all our peer institutions are doing. So MIT has a global strategy, Penn has a global strategy. We do not have an overarching way of integrating all of these competing priorities and deciding what are our top five, what are we really going to do, what are the means to get there. And so that's why I drafted this, because I've worked on these plans and I've also worked on diversity, and we have a reactive stance rather than a proactive stance. And the job of top management is to take all this, put it down on the table, figure out what's important, figure out what we're going to do in the next 5 years. And that's what we really need to do, because we have a lot of great work started, like you said, and it's not integrated. So this is a chance for everybody here, everybody across campus, to have a say, to have some input on this, and to figure out what are our top priorities, figure out how we're going to get there.
Marty?
Yeah, serving on the campus planning committee. The campus planning committee put together a master plan, a revision of the old master plan. Now, the master plan, as I realize, is different from this in the sense that it's talking about facilities, mostly buildings and things like that. So, of course, you don't build something without an idea why you're building it. And the why you're building it is all involved in these other matters here. For example, the campus planning committee is discussing how it is that sustainability, which wasn't on the front burner when it is the last master plan was developed, can be incorporated in the revision of the master plan and the update. But that said, what I'd suggest is that Charlie's point about all the people working on these things is really essential to keep in mind. And I really think that the sentiment behind this is right. All the resolves or all the whereases have all the necessary things to think about. But I think what Charlie suggested is that the authors of this look at the various components, Linda's included, that are working on different different aspects of what we should be a strategic plan, an overarching vision. And that then there be a integration of those into a committee structure, representative of all of the different people that are working, as opposed to setting up a separate Uber committee, if one assumes, which says, all right, master planners, you've been talking about this, but these are the things we want you to do. Because those guys, those folks are already working on it. We're already working on it. So I suggest this, once again, table, because this seems to be the issue here. It maybe was tabled last time. To think about how it is that this is going to be integrated with all the different committees that are working on elements in the strategic plan, but following the guidelines that are in the whereases about sustainability, about diversity, inclusion, and these other matters.
Let's extend the meeting by 5 minutes.
Okay, so there's been a motion to extend the meeting by 5 minutes. Is there a second? There's a second. Is there any dissent to extending the meeting? There's dissent to extending the meeting.
Yes.
So we'll now move into discussion about whether or not to extend the meeting. So would you like to be first?
I got an hour to drive home.
Okay. Yeah. So
I can just leave, I guess.
Yes.
And then you can extend.
You could. Okay. So we'll vote on whether or not to extend the meeting. If you'd like. Oh, Ulysses.
No, I was actually going to say the same thing. Regardless of what you decide, I'm going back to work. I'm leaving this meeting. So you got to do what you do.
Okay. So we'll vote on whether or not to extend the meeting by 5 minutes. If you're in favor of extending the meeting by 5 minutes, please raise your hand or placard. You know what? It passes. It passes. So the meeting's extended by 5 minutes. So that means I'm going to continue on with the speakers list.
We need numbers for recording.
Okay, like overwhelming majority.
By majority is fine.
By majority, let the minutes reflect that an overwhelming majority of the assembly took 4 minutes to extend the meeting by five. So next is Anna.
Okay, I'll try to be quick. I can see the concerns about staffing this, and adding one more thing, I can also see where it's urgently needed right now, or soon, and we don't want to lose sight of this. Linda, would you be open, as a compromise, to changing the dates on this to reflect the time that President Pollock will need to take to get her staff in place, such that we move everything so it essentially starts at the end of this academic year, and then goes forward from there. So it will happen, but also gives time for that all. I concede the rest of my 10 minutes to you to answer.
Okay.
Yeah, to me, resolution is simply, here's something we think needs attention, and it's not going to happen in any time frame we give for anyway, and so I'm fine with that.
Then
it's certainly just,
I apologize for doing this. I am going to motion to table this so that we can actually nail down between the two of us after this meeting dates and do that like first thing next meeting. And it sounds like people are okay with this then.
Second. I would just amend it right now.
All right.
If there isn't anything else to say, in whatever time, just take out the time.
Can
so I would actually end
the process to begin.
Again, like the assembly can do as it wishes. I would recommend against making like amendments kind of off the cuff unless they're small, because we want to think through them, but if you have something that's like already well thought out, then let's do it.
If that's a compromise, motion to amend line 39 to read fall 2018. Does that work?
Just the whole
and
line replaced with the word fall 2018.
But
the problem is there's going to be several updates.
It's three. It's changed the 7 to an 8. It's changed the 8 in line 40 to a 9, and it's changed the 8 in line 50 to a 9.
Okay, so there's been a motion to do the following thing to the resolution. On line 39, you would change the 7 in 2017 to an 8. You would change in line 40 the 8 to a 9. And then in line 50, you would change the 8 to a 9, right?
Yes.
To change the 8 to a 9, so that essentially everything's bumped back by a year. So that's the motion. Does the motion have a second?
Second.
Okay, it has a second, so we'll now move into discussion on that motion to amend.
Charlie?
This makes perfect sense because everything I mentioned there, virtually everything is going to be over in venue.
Okay.
There's been
a motion to call the question. I got a second. Is there any dissent to calling the question on the motion? Seeing none, we'll vote. If you're in favor of the motion to amend, please raise your hand or placard. The majority passed the majority passed it. So yeah.
Move the question.
I think the account is a good idea.
Yeah, what was that?
I think account
okay.
On the passage of
the
resolution.
Okay. On the on passage of resolution, I'll definitely do it. But on little amendments,
okay.
You know, I think it's not that bad. And it's not even close.
Okay.
So
move
the question. So there's been a motion to move the question, and the question being the resolution itself.
Second.
Yeah. So okay. So then we'll vote on whether or not to approve the resolution as it is written. If you are, wow, you guys are really eager. If you're in favor of the resolution as it is written with the amendments, please raise your hand or placard. This is a resolution. This is moving the actual resolution. Okay. All right. If you are opposed, and if you would like to abstain, and then Ulysses, you were in favor, right? Right. Okay. So then by a vote of 15-0-1, UA resolution passes. We have essentially expired our extended time, and so de facto, anything not left on the agenda will get pushed into the next agenda. The next thing was UA Resolution 5. Is there a motion to extend the meeting? I just need to offer it. No?
All right. Motion to adjourn.
It went well.
It could have gone much worse.
It went well.
I personally don't really care, but I remember why I care more. So, yeah. 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 So, ye